I got no issues with that line. They're doing a good job. Just watched a bunch of forechecks here this morning. Those guys are really working and competing and creating lots of pressure up ice, which is allowing them to spend less time on our end. So I like a lot of what that group is doing. Mitch even last night, you know, didn't get on the sheet, but you know, there's a few plays that he made at different times to advance the puck and get us out of trouble. That's important. It's this, you know, the way the matchups roll right now, those guys are taking on some tough responsibility playing against Pastrnak, and have done a really good job of it. So each line's not going to roll every single night offensively. Their time will come in the series, but I like what they've done so far here defensively, and they're a big part of, you know, last night's win.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. That, of course, Sheldon Keefe after the Game 2 victory in Boston, where Austin Matthews just took the entire team, put him on his back. Mm-hmm. Part of all three goals, including, of course, scoring the game winner mm-hmm. on a breakaway. That was Sheldon Keefe talking about the second line, but mm-hmm. I think we all know who it was directed mostly at, and he mentioned him by name, Mitch yep. Marner. That second line had a robust 18% of the shot share expected goals for mm-hmm. percentage at 5-on-5. It's quite poor. They didn't look all that dangerous.
No.
But it's fine. It's fine, Brent. Mitch Marner, it's fine. You're doing great, bud. Mm. Keep it up. And the series is tied. And maybe the rest of this roster, all they have to do is just punt. Maybe it's like three punt lines and then the goal-scoring line that's going to score all the goals with Austin Matthews, the now 70-goal scorer.
Mm-hmm.
But probably you're yeah. going to need something from the formerly 99-point man, Mitch Marner, which takes us to today's front page of the Toronto Sun sports section.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Mitch Marner, this is never going to come into his sphere. He'll never hear this. He'll never hear tale.
Pay attention to the media? Never.
No. Nobody is, yeah, he doesn't do that, okay? But if he were to open up the sports section today, he might see the invisible leaf, the great Photoshop job of Mitch Marner's jersey and having no face.
Yeah.
And the subheadline is, when buds need him most, Mitch Marner pulling his usual playoff disappearing act. And he has a Steve Simmons article. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's not entirely just a blasting of Mitch Marner. There's some nuance in it, but it doesn't matter. When yes,
And we should say they don't write the headlines. And unless he has more in the toolkit than I knew, mm-hmm. I don't think Steve Simmons did that Photoshop either.
I don't think so.
I shouldn't assume though.
Yeah. Okay. So there's two things for me here. One is like, yeah, that's undeniable. And it's part of the conversation. We've had it, right?
Yep.
But it wasn't the lead item after game two. So they won it, mm-hmm. right? And it's not the lead item going into game three because the series is tied at ones. And I think on balance, most people have come to the same conclusion that we did after the first 120 minutes of mm-hmm. hockey, that I think the Leafs kind of look like the better team. If the yep. goaltending is close to a wash, I think they win this series.
Mm-hmm.
But it's undeniable that this guy, who is supposed to be part of the incredible depth at the forward position,
mm-hmm.
it hasn't happened for him in his past eight playoff games, going back to last spring,
mm-hmm.
one even strength point. His past 11 playoff games, one goal.
Yep.
I mean, that's part of the conversation. The Leafs are tied in the series. They have a chance to win it. But Mitch Marner is on notice if they lose it.
Mm-hmm.
That he's going to be public enemy number one.
Well, and so much of it is the road we took to get here. This isn't a story that was written through the first two games of a Boston Bruins series. This story, it's like it starts with the puck over the glass panel. Actually, it doesn't. It starts with the first Boston Bruins series and him blocking shots at the end of a game three win. And you think, oh my God, look at what's ahead of you here. And then there's the puck over the glass stuff in Montreal. And is that like a super unfortunate circumstance? Like, I'm not going to completely absolve him of it, but that is also just, it's not bad luck, but that is just a run of play that I think it's safe to say we will never see from him in his life again, of just flipping puck over the glass. You mm-hmm. see the emotion on his face, and like, all we want is guys to care. But that wasn't, I'm mad, I'm going to lock in and care more now. That was, mm-hmm. things are spiraling. Like, go see the still picture of him in the penalty box after that. Like he looks like he's going to well up. And again, like you want guys to care. So I'm not going to kill him for that. But this is what we always talk about, of the way this market affects different people. William Nylander, his superpower is that he doesn't care about any of this. Well, whatever the North, if that's the North Pole, whatever the South Pole of it is Mitch Marner, because he clearly cares so much. And again, that's a good thing. But when you make the money you make and you're in the peak of your powers the way he is, and this part can't be overstated, and William Nylander's not here, of course the spotlight is going to go to you. Of course it is. And Matthews is doing his job. And Tavares, we can have the conversation about what he makes, but guess what? We've kind of had that conversation. I think the referendum has been had on what John Tavares is or what's fair to expect of him. So if Matthews is doing his job and you like what the first line's given you and expectations have shifted on John Tavares and William Nylander's not here, where else is there to look for offense? Yeah. Where else? Like we can have a conversation about Nick Robertson and wanting it from him.
Should have scored in game two.
Yeah, he should have. You're right. How dare you if you're going to sit here and say Nick Robertson needs to be the guy.
David Kemp has scored in this series.
Right.
Big that goal, fourth line was creating all kinds of chances.
By the way, just like big goal scorer, David Kemp. I don't know. It's like of all the goals he's scored, it feels like seven of them have been in clutch situations, whatever that means. So is it a little unfair that in a series where the Leafs are tied, that Marner is already getting like prepped to be public enemy number one? A little teensy bit, but it's not.
This is not yesterday. This is today's paper, right? Like this is not in the immediacy following a victory. Mm-hmm. This is in an off day between games of the series shifting to Toronto.
Gotta talk about something.
Yeah. It's fine. Like if I were him, I would say this is just the media market. I would do my best, and maybe it would be difficult to, but I would just totally separate myself from the discourse because that's that. The whole purpose of that is to inflame, is to invoke conversation, invoke discourse, and the reality isn't that, and I would just live in the reality or try to. I would surround myself with people that would be reminding me of the reality.
So this is the thing, and this has been my pet theory with Marner about this all along, and like we'll never know. I don't even think Marner would tell people this if this is true. I think the only person who knows is him. I don't think it's that Mitch Marner is sitting there staring on Instagram on his phone all day, seeing Leaf fan 626 being like, "We need more from Mitch. He's letting the boys down." I don't think he's reading the Toronto Sun and going, "Oh my God, I'm being raked over the coals." And I don't think this was happening in Boston the last 2 days. But I do think when he is, I don't think people are coming up to him going, "Come on, Mitch, you got to be better." When he's, I don't know, it's like I highly doubt he does his own grocery shopping, but when he's running around town.
That's the funniest thing is like the Twitter criticizers in person, that's the never reality of.
But I do think, and again, there's no way to know this, I think that when he's walking around and he sees, and I want to be clear, not that I saw him, but it's like he sees me and my young son wearing our Leafs hats, he's going, "Oh, man. And dad's probably like barbecuing me to his kid." Like, I don't think that's like a conscious thought he's having, but I think that's what it is when you're kind of steeped in the lore. If you're going to talk about him wearing it or the moment not even being too big, because guess what? He has come through in big moments, not the ultimate game six, game seven, but he has, you just look at performance, he has put up the exact same production. Coming very different ways, but then Matthews has in his playoff career. So it's not like it hasn't happened for him. But you just need it to go right in an important spot.
Okay, so there are certain guys that are clearly motivated by this type of conversation, right? That it's like, "Oh, you know what? I'm going to show you. F you. Like, forget it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Watch this." The Maple Leafs must obviously very fervently believe that this fella is not motivated by that, because we just played you the Sheldon Keefe comments. How many more examples do you need of this organization walking back even the slightest criticism of the player? And different strokes for different folks. I'm not saying this is some failing. And maybe I'd be the same way if I was a professional athlete. And he's had a tremendous, tremendous career. Mm-hmm. And they would know him and what motivates him better than I would. And some guys need the carrot, some people need the stick. Mm-hmm. But it seems pretty clear, like if you're going down the route of, well, here's a guy that sees the discourse and knows how people are going to talk about him if they lose this series and says, "Forget that. It's on my back." Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like number 34, after, remember, I brought it up after game one, after the playoff goal scoring drought.
I know, bold take by you. Auston Matthews no good at scoring goals. I know, bold take.
Six games, like there was, Auston Matthews has a lackluster series, doesn't put the puck in the back of the net.
Oh my God.
You don't think that's a ginormous conversation? And there was criticism of him not scoring in the five games against the Panthers. Had a tremendous game one, didn't score, missed a wide open cage, and then single-handedly won game two. I think that guy, if you were going to make the case, could be motivated by that type of stuff. I think what the Leafs are telling you, again, knowing the player much more than any of us do, that they know that you would like to hear Sheldon Keefe be a little more critical of his highly paid players, mm-hmm. but they know that if that happens, they're not likely to get the best out of him.
After the win on Monday night, Keefe got asked about how good the Matthews line was and just continued the run-on sentence of how good Matthews was right into all the good things Mitch Marner did in the game. It is very apparent. And I'd love to sit, and like we would all love, you know, just a psycho killer who is unfazed by everything. But not everybody is built that way. So I don't have a problem with Keefe trying to coach him in the way that seems best. But again, we talk about perception, and if it is seen to be somebody who needs to be, I don't know, like maybe coddled is too strong of a word, but you know, more carrot than stick, and it doesn't work. And again, this goes without saying, but if Matthews continues to have the series he's had so far and Nylander's not here, there's just only so many places for the blame to go. And Sheldon Keefe will wear it. Mm-hmm. If they don't get out of this first round series, I don't care if Marner and Nylander aren't playing in it. He's probably not surviving.
Well, I mean, that's a good point too, is that Sheldon Keefe, none of this is about self-preservation, because it's results are ultimately going to determine whether he wins or loses. So if he's, there's no argument to be made that, hey, he's not publicly criticizing Mitch Marner because mm-hmm. he doesn't want to upset the higher-ups who drafted and developed and signed Mitch Marner to this ginormous contract, although the architect is no longer here. Like, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Whatever you think is going to get the best out of the player, you do right now because you want to be working tomorrow. And there are examples of guys that he... And maybe it's not fair because these guys are easier to criticize because they're on one-year deals and they're not the faces of the franchise, but... What did we see after game one? Max Domi called out by name.
Well, so the thing about that, though, is it's very, from a coach, and look, like let me put my hand up. I, too, from a catharsis standpoint, would love to hear Sheldon Keefe really take Mitch Marner to task after one of these games. But it's not going to happen, okay? But I do also think there's a difference between publicly criticizing discipline versus a lack of execution. Mm-hmm. If he comes out there and says, Marner needs to make more 10 out of 10 highlight reel plays. It's like, I think he's trying to. Mm. I don't think Mitch Marner's going out there going, no, I'm just going to let the game come to me.
Yep.
I don't want to force anything. You can, if it is strictly a decision, a bad decision that is being made, even something like, you know, and I actually don't know how overly critical he was of it, but the Revo Edmondson double pinch from game one.
Yeah.
You can be very critical of that because that is just a bad decision that you made. But Mitch Marner hasn't put up any points in this series because he's made poor decisions. I mean, maybe in, you know, a moment you'd like him to shoot or pass or whatever, but it is not a lack of discipline. It's not even William Nylander dipsy doodling at the blue line and getting cute. If it was that, I think you'd see Keefe taking him much more to task. Mm. It's very hard, and I think it's different if it's an effort thing. It is easy to criticize effort. It is easy to criticize, and you're right to criticize, a lack of discipline. But when it is a skill player that is not making skill plays, I don't know that piling on them is the way to go. And I don't say that from a media perspective. Mm-hmm. Say your piece. Say what you need to say. But from Keith's perspective, as much as we would all love him to be critical, because it's like the only thing we cared about heading into the season, is how much autonomy does he have to be angry about these things? I actually don't know that being hypercritical of that player is the route to get anything out of him right now.
No, he knows that it's not.
Yep.
And that's why he hasn't done it. So we'll see.
And entirely possible he has a 3-point night tonight, and this is a moot point. Like,
sure,
so much Marner.
Nobody needs it more.
Yeah. But it also, nobody outside of Auston Matthews, no one more capable of it. David Pastrnak. outside of those two guys, there's no one more capable of it in the series than Marner. We haven't seen it yet. Like that has to be thrown in here. Like we kind of paper over it because I think we all understand. The reason we talk about him this way is he's not Nick Robertson. He is almost 100-point guy, Selke winger, Mitch Marner. And it's not, you don't need a good series out of him. Uh-huh. You don't need him to have some games. You need him to be a frontline player that should be, at worst, you know, forward, the third best forward in this series. At worst, that's what he should be.
Yeah. I mean, I would say at worst, if William Nylander is not in there, second best. But yeah, I mean,
David Pastrnak is a six.
I thought you were talking about.
No, sorry. I was taking all the forwards in the series.
Yeah.
It's like Pastrnak can have a better series, and that's no
goals,
no slouch.
That's okay.
But you're also allowed to have a better series than David Pastrnak.
Sure.
You can do that.
Yep.
You're a guy who's going to ask for more than Pastrnak money in, I don't know, as soon as 5 days if this thing goes poorly.
Yeah. We'll see if William Nylander returns. I've already said my piece that, watching the video as I have and considering the stakes of these games and how innocuous the injury must be if he's on the ice. But, I think he's done, and this is all window dressing, but Renaud Lavoie disagrees.
I would like to commend you. That was a good limb to get out there.
Thank you.
I feel like everyone's been like, I don't know. Maybe this series, maybe not. Good stance. Good job.
Based on nothing.
I'm going to shake your hand. That was a good job.
Thank you. Yeah, again, based on nothing. Is this a good time for Nylander to return, though, if he does return?
Okay.
So we're tied at one here, coming off a victory.
Mm.
Second line not going great, though. Is this a good time in the series for him to come back, and how does it change as far as the pressure is concerned? Because, you know, I talked about it, I think it was yesterday, about like the Kevin Durant in 2019 thing for the Warriors. The more they won, the less pressure there would be for him to return. And then when the Raptors won the way they did, they did obviously feel a higher impetus to get him back on the court, and that didn't work out so well for them, which is
disgusting. Raptors fans who I would have done the exact same thing.
It was very beneficial for the Raptors, who raised their only NBA championship banner, and don't think they were doing that if Kevin Durant was on the other side. I think I have to watch the minutes that he played in that game and how different it looked. Anyways, is this a good time for William Nylander to return?
Way better coming in, and I want to be clear. I'll have my own theory that has no information. I don't think he's playing tonight, but it's way better for him to come into the lineup off a win than off a loss. If he comes in off a loss, and obviously, like, doomsday scenario, they lose both games in Boston, but if we do the thing we talked about earlier where you just flip the results, Leafs lose 5-1, they're coming home, it feels not must-winny, but it feels like you really, the momentum of the series could shift in a big way. All of a sudden, there's all this pressure on Nylander to be the offensive savior, and oh my God, they just had one goal. They've had trouble scoring. If it's not Matthews, they haven't been able to generate anything. It amps the pressure up on him. I don't know that it is if Nylander's ready to go and you can get him in, it's a good time to put him in, but it's way, way better coming off a win than off a loss for me.
I wonder if it enters the thought process on when to bring him back too. Like, when is I wonder if they do feel the pressure and whether there is a moment where, hey, we got our backs against it, we got to throw, it doesn't matter what version of William Nylander we've got. If it's more than 50%, he's out there on the ice. I do think, like, if he is capable of going, I think it's a perfect situation for him to
tonight.
To re-enter, not just coming off a win, not just with the series tied at ones, but with that second line not producing much. Like, can it get much worse than the way that line looked and didn't produce through the first two games of this series?
No.
I mean, I guess the counter would be like, well, do you want a guy who's not 100% to enter a struggling situation? I would say he's not playing if you expect him to struggle.
Yeah.
Like, he's playing in the hockey game if he's ready to go. And if he's ready to go, you're hoping to get 100% out of William Nylander. I think it's a perfect scenario for him to jump into the lineup, onto that second loaded up line, and then all of a sudden, there's Mitch Marner. He just needed a little more talent than the aging John Tavares. Both guys get the boost of being part of the depth scoring on this team and giving Austin Matthews some semblance of offensive support. I think if he's capable of going, tonight would be the perfect circumstance for him.
Well, and just to add one more wrinkle to that, the idea of it And, you know, I suppose you could make this argument for the next game as well, but it being at home, it allows Keefe to pick and choose his spots with Nylander a little more, maybe get him a more ideal matchup. And again, if you feel like you have to super babysit his minutes, part of this is what's available to them too. Like, I don't want to say Nick Robertson has set the world on fire in this series, but mm-hmm. he hasn't been so poor or killing them in a way that you say 40% of Nylander is better than 100%. Well, no one's 100%, but whatever, you know, semblance of health Robertson's at now, I think that part has to color the equation a little bit as well. Not in terms of do you get Willie back, but it decreases the impetus to do it a little bit. That Robertson's giving you good minutes, Doer's giving you good minutes as well. And again, like, you obviously would in a thousand times out of a thousand take a slightly lesser Nylander than either of those guys, but it has decreased the pressure a little bit that the two guys that are kind of the bubble spots in the lineup should he come back have both played fairly well.
Has the way the Panthers have played against the Lightning impacted you retroactively evaluating this series and whether the Leafs got the better of the two matchups?
Oh,
and the one that looked until game 82 for the Panthers looked like they were locked into?
Yeah, it's just been very nice to see someone else going through the torture chamber that is the Atlantic Division. And it's the team that tortured you for so long. That, I don't know, like, there's like a Michael Bisping, like, spinning back fist save by yeah. Sergei Bobrovsky last night.
How are we going to get a better save than that?
I don't know. Playoffs are weird, but probably not. I'd be hard. I feel like the only way you get it is an egregious mistake by a goaltender where they have to do like the Cujo diving back into the net. Like, it only. Yeah.
Well, that was kind of that, though.
No, but I mean, I'm talking about the one where the goalie's behind the net and he just like passes.
Yeah.
Just,
oh, and then the paddle one where
you
just
dive
paddle.
And it's just the paddle. I feel like that's basically the bar, but is that better than a spinning backhand in that moment?
How much padding do you have on your back also as a goaltender?
I think a lot. I feel like those guys wear a lot of padding.
Yeah, it's mostly on the front, though. I think they're used to taking pucks off the front of their body, not necessarily off the middle of their back. Like, listen. And Sergei Bobrovsky wasn't like, my spine!
Yeah. I don't know. I saw the like behind the scenes video of the Leafs where they like give the puck to the player of the game and they put it in there. And just based on the amount of padding John Tavares was wearing in that video, who's not a goalie, where he looked like he was going to like battle in medieval times. Mm. Yeah, I'd imagine a lot of padding on the back. Don't you try to be like, oh, poor Bobrovsky.
No. I was literally wondering. I never played goal for a second in my life.
Yeah,
I played
lacrosse
goalie.
Oh, for like content. Yeah. Not really. I thought you were going to tell me there was a moment where like 12-year-old Ennis is just lacrosse goalieing.
I took professional lacrosse shots at my face.
How'd that go for you?
I did better than I thought I would.
You're still here.
Yeah, no, it's terrifying.
Yeah, of course. That sounds so, just no fun at all.
No.
Although I will say, like, big head, be a good lacrosse goalie.
Thanks. Yeah, I didn't save any of them with my giant head.
Should have tried.
Panthers have won 11 straight playoff overtime games.
Yeah.
The Lightning have lost 6 straight playoff overtime.
I was watching that game last night and they threw that stat out there, and just knowing that the Leafs are responsible for so many, I was like, oh, this is delicious, tasty.
Maybe this is an obvious answer. So Carter Verhaeghe now, like, it's ridiculous he's
three
done.
Three back of Sakic for the all-time lead in overtime goals.
He's tied for third all-time with a little guy I like to call Glenn Anderson and Patrick Kane, Corey Perry, Maurice Richard. Second with six.
Quickly, my greatest take of all time was watching the Matthews 4-goal game and seeing Zach Hyman and being like, why can't he be Glenn Anderson? And I was joking. And now it's like, I don't know. Why can't he?
Yeah, you can. Maybe this is an obvious answer to this question. Justin Williams is Mr. Clutch, right? You
Mr.
think
game
of Clutch.
Seven.
That's Justin Williams. I don't know. Is Carter Verhaeghe making a case?
No.
Because it's like also the sample of overtime games, like such a smaller sample than the other guys on that list in the top three. What's more clutch than scoring in playoff overtime? Because like not all of Justin Williams' game 7 goals have come to win the game.
Right.
A lot of them open the scoring, which is also kind of clutch.
Almost more important somehow.
But.
Yeah.
And like, cups, like it's different.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. Is there not an argument for Carter Verhaeghe and scoring in overtime?
What I'd say, and I actually should probably look at the stats because I'm probably disrespecting Carter Verhaeghe in a way he doesn't deserve. When you make the argument of like what the player is versus the lore they have, it's like Justin Williams feels like a great player. And not that Verhaeghe isn't, but I don't know, maybe it's the fact that he was like a cast off and Justin Williams has his lore of Mr. Game 7. But it feels like Carter Verhaeghe having that feels stranger than Justin Williams being Mr. Game 7, yeah. If that makes
sense. Justin Williams better.
Yes.
How about that? Just Justin Williams is a better player.
Yeah, Carter Verhaeghe feels like Martin Jelena to me. Like, it's like good player, but has these moments and just kills you, and it'll never not hurt because Leaf, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that one, you can't kill anybody for that one. It's like Carter Verhaeghe was wandering the wilderness for half a decade, and then he was like, yeah, maybe just be good at hockey.
Yeah, and to the Panthers' benefit, yeah, it's hard not to watch that series, and I mean... Yeah. Both teams look...
Seth Jarvis, we can have very different conversations about.
Sure. But yeah, no, that, I think Maple Leafs, hey, and they may still lose to the Bruins, but I think they got the better of the two matchups than the team that went all the way to the Stanley Cup final.
I would agree. And again, just like keep torturing each other. I love it. That's great. John Cooper being angry. Yeah. Oh, it's one, all of it, just wonderful.
We'll see if Bruins fans will be tortured if they lose in this first round series. We'll talk to one next. Rear Admiral. You know him as R.A., co-founder, co-host of the Spit and Chicklets podcast. Next, as the Fan Morning Show continues, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL, the J.D. Bunkus podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Game 3, Leafs, Bruins tonight, Scotiabank Arena. Oh, yes. Jobs on the line here in Toronto. But as we know, nothing on the line for the Bruins. They're not even supposed to be here. No Patrice Bergeron. It's all gravy. For the Boston Bruins.
Just a little
bit. No pressure. Despite setting all the regular season records you could.
A season ago and then bowing out after a 3-1 lead in Game 7 of the Panthers a season ago. But they are tied at ones, headed to Toronto for tonight's Game 3. Let's talk to Rear Admiral, co-founder, co-host of the Spit and Chicklets podcast. How's it going?
Prank call. Hang up. We don't talk about that on this show.
That's all we talk about in evaluating these two teams. No, I joke. And obviously, like...
No, it's all good. All good. No, thanks for having me, boys.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. Yeah, obviously, the Bruins have had way more recent postseason success than the Toronto Maple Leafs. But, yeah, how much do a couple of first-round exits, and especially the one last year, to a team that we didn't know would go all the way to a cup final and would assert itself as one of the favorites this season? But, like, how much does that paint the picture of the pressure on this Bruins team?
It stinks. I mean, any first-round exit always stinks, especially in that manner. I mean, it should have been over. I think overtime, Game 5, Marchand had the breakaway game on a stick, series on a stick, didn't get it done, and we know how it ended up. It was especially bitter because, you know, it was Bergeron's last year. Of course, we didn't know it at the time 100%, and, yeah, there was extra salt in the wound, though. We definitely wanted to see the team win a last Stanley Cup for him. But, you know, I think we've all turned the page, and you know, it's a new team, and Zacher and Coyle, I think with the expectations they had with Krejci and Bergeron retired, I think they did a hell of a job. I think they actually had more points combined than Bergeron and Krejci did last year. The pressure's always there. It's Boston. It's title time. I know we're kind of slipping Patriots-wise lately. But, the expectations are always high in the city. And, the pressure's on Boston now that it's a split going back to Toronto.
So thinking about the pressure, who do you feel kind of wears that or feels it the most in Boston? Right now, there is a very easy answer for that. It's Mitch Marner here. I mean, Matthews had the game. He scores the goal. He has two primary assists. Marner's been pointless through two series. It's pretty hard for me to sit here from the outside looking in to think Brad Marchand is going to feel the pressure. People are going to turn on him. Is there somebody who will kind of wear this if the Bruins do have a lackluster first round? Like, maybe it's Montgomery if he doesn't find the right answer with the goalies. Who do you feel like from kind of the Boston side of things is going to wear it if this goes awry?
I think you just named him, the guy behind the bench right now. Montgomery, I don't know what the method with his goalies is now. There's been 18 goalies who played in the NHL playoffs so far. Mm-hmm. That means two teams have used two goalies. Vancouver, because their number one, Thatcher Demko, is hurt, so they had to go to Smith. The only other team who's used two goalies is the Bruins, and it's not injury-related. So I don't know what the methodology is, what he's thinking. I mean, what's his name? Swayman had a terrific game. Stopped 35 out of 36 shots. A lot of tough ones. Kept it, you know, kept Toronto at bay the whole game. And then he doesn't come back in the next game. I just don't get it. Omar wasn't the reason they lost that game, you know, but he gave up three goals. I mean, he gave up three goals on whatever it was, 30-something shots. I don't know. I just don't know why Monty didn't come back with Swayman. I don't know if he's going to goof it up again or goof up the lines like he did sort of last year. So, yeah, if this goes awry and the Bruins don't get out of the first round, I think that's where a lot of fingers will be pointed, regardless of, you know, who gets points or who doesn't get points.
I mean, does the seven-game series against the Panthers inform the goaltending decision? Because they waited until Game 7 to start Swayman in the series, and it was Allmark coming off a Vezina season. But, yeah, and this is also what they've been doing all the way back until February. I can't wait for the situation to show itself again in this series. Like, say Swayman wins tonight, for them to go to Allmark on Saturday would be unbelievable, but I don't rule it out. I thought it was unbelievable they went to Allmark in game two after Swayman's been unbeaten against the Leafs this season. But, yeah, going back to how the decision-making played itself out against the Panthers last year, do you think that impacts why Jim Montgomery is deciding to alternate these guys?
I have no idea. I don't know what they're thinking is. I know they kind of went with the rotation all year, but it's the playoffs, man. You can't make a plan for the whole playoffs and say this is how we're going to do it. You got to go game to game. You got to go with your gut. I mean, if Omar had a shutout the other night or last game, I would say, you know, stick with him. You don't take a shutout goalie out of the lineup. But I really don't know what he's thinking or what the brain trust is thinking. I don't know. I mean, where it's a playoff series, you need a guy to win 16 games. If he's got to start, the bulk of them, so be it. I mean, that's the history of the playoffs. I know teams have been going with two goalies a little bit more lately, but I don't think it's enough to warrant, going with a one-on-one rotation here like we're seeing. I'm baffled, and especially last year. I mean, I said it after game two. You can go check my tweets. Start Swayman next game. And they started Omar six games in a row. He didn't start more than four games in a row all season. Yeah. And then come to find out he was injured, Kevin Weeks' report, with a painful, debilitating injury, which just further baffled everybody here why he got so many starts. So, as you can tell, we're still a little bit bitter about last year, and we're probably leery about history repeating itself this year.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's just like, it's very nice to hear somebody from outside of this city talking about, like, the pain of coaching decisions past and playoff failures. It's like, that's kind of our thing, RA. That's what we do. So it's nice to hear soaking in those waters as well. Matthews, I mean, we mentioned it. He had an incredible game in game two. He was pretty good in game one as well. I mean, we've all had our whacks at the Matthews Pinata here in terms of just how dominant he's been. What do you see from him on a night-to-night basis? I mean, I'm not going to sit here and ask you to kind of power rank him, but it just continues to stand out to me how different he, McKinnon, and McDavid kind of all are. They're all, again, like, McDavid's the best player, but they're all so dominant in their own regard. It never seems to stop standing out to me just how different but great all three of those guys are in their own kind of way.
Yeah, that game too. I mean, if Toronto is to go in and win this series or win a few more series after, this is a game I think people will point to. I mean, obviously he had the goal, factored in the two other goals, 23 minutes, 24 seconds on ice. The only two players who had more than him were Lindholm and McAvoy. I mean, he had the most on his team, including all the defensemen, plus two, eight shots on net, six hits, almost 70% at the dot. Just a dominant performance, both ends of the ice. And, that's what you expect from your leaders at this time of year. Now, some of your leaders, guys on the team, kind of were the opposite of that. I don't want to mention any names, but I think guys in that locker room.
Yeah, Mitch Marner, is that who you're talking about?
In that locker room, have to look Austin Matthews in the face after their efforts last game. And I would expect better efforts from certain guys in game three. But, yeah, definitely a game that helped build his legend more. Again, if they go on and, do great things this playoffs, this will certainly be a game that people will point to as not necessarily a turning point, but just as maybe a foundational game. And Austin Matthews taking more steps to become one of the great players of the game.
I want to do a temperature check on your confidence and compare it to before the series started, all right? Like, how did you feel about the Bruins' ownership of the Maple Leafs going into this series, and then you win game one, 5-1, and a couple of power play goals, and then after the Matthews performance and after the bounce back, after going down 1-0 on another horrible penalty taken by Jake McCabe, like, where is your confidence in this Bruins team after two games of the series?
A little lower than when it started. I mean, I had the Bruins in five, I called. Just, you know, by dint of the, you know, disparity in goaltending and on defense as well. I give the edge to Toronto's top six easily. But I thought everywhere else, you know, coaching and the roster construction, I thought the Bruins had a pretty big advantage. But, you know, after what we saw last game, man, you still got to go out and play the game. And, I don't fault Omar for the loss at all. I do wonder how they would have fared if they did start Swayman. But, yeah, my confidence maybe knocked off maybe 5 to 10%. But, I think if the Bruins play the way they're capable of, they should still win this series.
Yeah, that's good to hear. But just so you know where I'm kind of sitting from, it's like somehow the Leafs win did not affect my confidence one way or another. It's like I'm still quaking in my boots over.
The Leafs fans. Yeah. I mean, it's like pre-2004 Red Sox fans. You know, I understand. I understand the pain. It'll go away someday. I just don't know when.
Yeah, I know. I had to have a child, so hopefully one day somebody in my family will see it, because I'm not positive it'll be me. You know, the physicality, it was such a talking point coming into this. The Leafs go and get Domi and Bertuzzi and, I mean, lump Edmondson into that. Revo. This is a different Leafs team in terms of the physicality. Brad Marchand said as much. How do you think that kind of changes the series, just that the Leafs have some pushback? I mean, it's been such a talking point here in terms of Matthews that as good as he's been in the playoffs, there's been way too many moments of him kind of shying away from scrums and not looking at guys. And look, Austin Matthews isn't all of a sudden a power forward and an enforcer, but he seems to kind of be realizing how big and strong he is in some of these scrums. How have you seen the kind of physical battle between these two teams?
Yeah, obviously it's good, you know, to get a little bit more muscle, like you mentioned, Bertuzzi and Revo and Domi. But at the same time, you know, I think a lot of the toughness of Toronto needs to come within from, you know, guys just maybe getting grittier and digging deeper. Because, you know, as much as Revo can, you know, make guys a little bit bigger on the ice or Bertuzzi, some of these guys have to play bigger just on their own, you know, compared to years past. They, you know, like they can't be soft. I mean, that clip of mine has been going around for 3 days now. I don't know if he was trying to play it to himself or what the hell he was doing. McAvoy just took the puck and dumped it out. It was a tough look of play. So I think that type of toughness, like just, you know, inner strength, that's more of probably the concern of the Leafs. Because let's face it, there's not a lot of fight in the playoffs, hardly any. You know, things get a little bit rougher. But I think it's just the will to win, the will to compete. I think that's an issue more than, you know, so much of having a Revo or a Bertuzzi on the ice. It's just guys just got to get grittier and bear down, I think, a little bit more.
So we know what it's like to root for Brad Marchand when he's wearing the Maple Leaf. And we'll, I assume next year when they have the World Cup of Hockey, he'll be part of Team Canada. But there's no face licking when he's next to Sidney Crosby, right? What's it like to root for the face licker, the league's biggest pest or most effective pest?
The epitome of one of those guys. You love him on your team and you hate to go against him, and you hate him on any other team. I mean, I think that's the best way to describe Marchand. He has some antics where, you know, you might not have wanted on his Emmy reel at the end of the day, but he's a hell of a player. I mean, I think all is said and done. I mean, I don't know if he's going to make the Hall of Fame, but I think certainly there'll be maybe a debate about it. He still has a few more years left as well. I love Marchand, man. I mean, you know, everybody who roots for a team in the NHL has rooted for a villain every year. I mean, it's part of the league. We all love our bad guys. I mean, we had Darcy Tucker on. When did we have him on? No, a couple months ago on Chicklets. I mean, he was, you know, the epitome of he called himself a rat out there. So everybody rooted for a villain of that caliber. And yeah, I love Marchand, and I'll root for him all day.
Yeah, I assume he's going to play in game three despite the vicious slash to his leg by Tyler Bertuzzi.
And the wrist slash, too? God, walking wounded. Miracle he survived.
Anyways, should be fun tonight.
Love it.
All right, thanks for this.
Hey, anytime, my friends. Good luck, and hopefully we'll talk to you a little bit later.
All right, see you, man. Rear Admiral, co-founder, co-host of the Spittin' Chicklets podcast. So he's come off a little bit of his confidence. yeah. picking the Bruins in five to start the series. And
be tough to stick with that. It'd be very bold.
I mean,
I said Leafs in six. I don't know that I brought that to the mic.
Possible.
I said Leafs in six.
Yeah, I guess we didn't do our official predictions.
I had it written down and then just never came to fruition.
Leafs in six.
That's
eh?
What I said. Yeah. I'm not going to tell you how I feel about that after two games in the series. That is, in fact, what I said.
I think
I'll bring Michael Gibbons from City News 680 in here to verify.
I think part of that also is, and I don't know if this was a conscious thought, but now I'm going to make it a conscious thought.
Okay.
That we're going to game six if it happens.
Oh, that's right.
It's Toronto. I think, I don't know if it went into your conscious thinking.
Okay. You know what? Actually, you mentioned this to me. And I thank you for reminding me of how much I hate myself in that the second. So I picked Leafs in six, and then our boss, Ryan Favreau, is like, hey, you guys want to go to game six? I'm like, oh my God, they're losing in six. I'd never been more confident of anything in my life. That the second I had the chance to experience joy, that it would be the exact opposite is how I went there.
I mean, if it was, boy, we're looking for it every year. It's like, what is the thing that exercises the demons? And maybe, oh, it's going down 3-0 in the second round and coming back and doing the 0-4 Red Sox thing. Nope. Nah, that wasn't it. Maybe it was finally getting through, not needing a game seven against the Lightning.
That
hey, game six, overtime.
Yeah. John Tavares.
Maybe, nope. My best guess at this point would be game seven. Against the team that you've lost three consecutive game sevens to, exercising those demons in that building in overtime.
Yeah, and then you know it's waiting for you? The demon from last year, the Florida Panthers.
And then like, you do just that,
like,
it's just
like, Paul McClain said it best, okay? Yeah. They're everywhere. Yeah. They're under their beds. They're in the car. Mm-hmm. I don't know where else he said, but wherever you can think of it, there's a demon lurking in Leafland.
You know what conversation, I mean, we can have, but I don't think is much of a conversation. It's really, you're grasping at straws if you think it's a real discussion.
Okay.
Is the TJ Brody, Timothy Liljegren thing and the swapping out or like the messing with the six defensemen that have played the first two games of this series. It was a question going into game one. Once we had that decision, which was very much on the radar, seeing as how it had happened during the regular season, and once Timothy Liljegren was able to return from his injury and play a couple of regular season games, once that's happened, I don't think we're continuing to have it. I think as far as the lineup manipulations and guys in and out of the lineup, the one that is the most pressing, obviously, the William Nylander one, but I don't think this blue line has been so egregious that you got to start messing with what's worked at least 50% of the time in Boston.
Yeah, and I think the biggest reason for that is that there's not the clean spot. Like the guy, Liljegren seems to be somebody that people are looking at, Labushkin as well. Last time I checked, correct me if I'm wrong, we've been talking about this team all year, so it'd be weird if I had got this wrong. Both those guys play on the right side. That's where TJ Brody has struggled ad nauseum this year. The best version of Brody you got has been on the left side. There's not really a spot for him on the left side because I'm not taking out Edmondson or Benoit. So I think it's just kind of as simple there. If the Leafs lose tonight and Labushkin or Liljegren or, I mean, Benoit or Edmondson for that matter struggle, we can have that conversation. But, yeah, I don't see a world where you can put TJ Brody in right now, especially when the option seems to be putting him on the right side, and that just hasn't worked since the middle of last season. I don't know what happened halfway through last season, but it really hasn't worked since then.
Yeah, so Leafs haven't had much postseason success at home in recent vintage, only winning once there despite winning around last season. I do look at this team, well, I mean, just factually it's different, right?
Very.
It's a different roster altogether. I mean, Austin Matthews also hasn't scored on home ice in a postseason game. It's been a while for him.
It's been a while.
I do look at this potentially going two ways with the amount of emotion that this Maple Leafs team plays with. And I keep mentioning it. Three times it's gone not the direction it's supposed to go. And I would have thought after the Max Domi slash to Brad Marchand in game one and then the public calling out that we would have had less of it. But we had factually 50% more of it in game two. They took two of those penalties and could have been a third as somehow Ilya Labushkin's
wild. I don't
whatever, they escaped. It's all good. Just three times, not
right.
four, where it could have been. So on the one hand, it's like, man, the emotion in the building. Mm-hmm. And boy, that first Ryan Reeves hit is going to hit, like, what a bit of dopamine that'll be.
Yeah.
On home ice. But yeah, there is a, if you were worried about this team being a little too amped up and that being part of the problem in game one and part of the problem in those two penalties that were ill-timed in game two, I mean, you have to be a little bit worried about that being even more amplified in front of the home fans at Scotiabank Arena tonight.
I thought the most excited I could ever, and it's funny because we don't think of this person of possessing emotions at all, let alone being excited about anything. I thought the most excited a Leaf could be to step on home ice was when John Tavares skated out and they announced him as captain. And it was a whole thing like, oh, who's it going to be? I bet who comes last will be the captain, it's Tavares. That, whatever finicky measurement we use to judge that, that record will be shattered by Max Domi playing
honestly.
His... Like, you talk about Revo hit, and of course, yeah. The Max Domi hit that will happen when Austin Matthews inevitably starts that game, I think. You know, I know the Bruins are going to put out who they want, but I would be shocked if Keefe doesn't go tone-setting with Matthews out there tonight. Domi is as well. It is about getting off to a good start in this game. And that doesn't necessarily mean scoring first. Obviously, you'd like that. But I think that as long as the game is trending in the right direction, and again, that doesn't necessarily mean you're winning. It just means that you're controlling the play. Then I think the Domi, the Bertuzzi, the Revos are able to keep it more in line because you don't feel like you have to do something to switch the way the game is going. Mm-hmm. But if they fall behind early or if Boston is controlling the run of play, then I can easily see a world where, and it's those two guys specifically, and Reeves a little smarter about it just because I think he understands he has to do less of it, but I can easily see Domi trying to get somebody going or spark something. And again, I'm going to say it. We love that about him. That is the thing you wanted on this team for so long. Hasn't been here since Kadri was here. It's about finding the line as well.
Yeah. It's different than game one of the series, though, or even, you know, the first two games of the series. Like, the message has already been sent.
It's not about message sending. I think it's about not letting the building tilt one way or another. And I don't talk about the players, so talk about the fans. I think that's what it would be about.
Yeah. I mean, and again, if you're going to be optimistic about these things, and I don't know why you would, especially considering the way this has gone throughout the course of the last couple of regular seasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, tougher for the officials to do the thing that they've done three times as well, right? It's going to be, they're only human. Mm. Now they've been human so much in that they're afraid of ever having the perception of being biased towards the most important franchise.
Yeah, they certainly had no problem calling the Justin Hall pick penalty at home.
Sure. Like I said, if you were going to think about it logically, though.
Oh, well, there's your problem, but. Yeah,
if you were going to think about it logically, and there's only so many of them that they can call, but yeah. The emotion that will emanate from the fans in the building if, in fact, it's, hey, it's a scrum and only one guy's getting pulled out and thrown in the box and it's Max Domi and not Brad Marchand. Tough to continue to do that time and time again, and maybe that's, you know, where Sheldon Keefe needs to do, like, the little Paul Maurice.
Yeah, well, this is very on brand for me, but I could also see it going the other way. Like, oh, you think all 20,000 of you are going to call the game tonight? Wrong. Y'all showed up to see me, Gordy Dwyer. I don't know why that's the name in my head. Yeah. Probably not even reffing tonight.
Yeah.
Wasn't fair. Sorry, Gord.
And again, recent history and evidence would suggest that you're probably closer to being right.
Man. Shocker.
But maybe try and use logic if you want to think optimistically. All right.
Okay.
We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of the Fan Morning Show. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590 Fan.
Good morning.